Right. Well, today is Easter, and I want to ask a really, really simple question tonight. And here it is. Do you believe that Jesus rose from the grave? It sounds like an Easter question or a religious question, but it's really a historical question and a personal question. It's a historical question. Do you believe Jesus really rose from the grave? Because it's about an event in history. And it's kind of like asking the question, do you believe the UNC Tar Heels won the NCAA men's basketball championship last Monday night? Or did the Holocaust take place, where 6 million Jews were murdered by the Nazis? Did the stock market crash in 1929? Did a bunch of men in 1776 gather around and sign a document that we call the Declaration of Independence? You see, those are historical questions, and historians can look at evidence, archaeologists, anthropologists, scholars, they can look at all kinds of things, and then they can come to conclusions about these events. And they can say, yes, a bunch of men did sign a document called the Declaration of Independence, and yes, the stock market crashed, and yes, the Holocaust did happen, and no, the Tar Heels did not win the championship this past week. They can make those historical conclusions. And so when it comes to this question, it's the same way. Did Jesus rise from the dead? Did that event actually take place in history? And my hunch is there's a group of people here tonight who would say, I don't know if I believe that. Like, I'm just not sure that I believe that that's actually true. I mean, I believe in God, and I think there's some good things in the Bible, and I think Jesus lived, and he was probably a good teacher, and he said some pretty amazing things and all that. But when it gets to, like, his death and resurrection, like, there's just things that some Christians believe, and I'm just not there yet. And you might not even say, I'm not there yet. You would just say, I'm not there. And I think they're actually wrong. Like, I think they're the ones who don't have it all figured out. I just don't know if I believe that's true. And you might point to a couple of things. You might say, first of all, it's a pretty astounding claim, somebody rising from the dead. I mean, if there's any people with scientific or medical backgrounds here, I know there's some of you, it's just an amazing claim that somebody could actually die and then rise from the dead. And so you might say, I just don't believe things like that happen. I'm not someone who believes in those kind of miracles. And maybe that's because you've never seen a miracle take place. Probably most of us have never actually seen a miracle take place. And so it's easy to say, I've never seen anything like that. I've never experienced anything like that. And so I just don't know if I can believe something like that happened. You might also say, and I'm not sure I believe like the Bible about that. There's a lot of good things in the Bible, but I know that there's some questions about the Bible when it comes to Jesus' life. I know there's a few books in the Bible that talk about Jesus, but weren't they written like 30 or 40 years later? And isn't it possible that the guys that wrote those books maybe made up these stories? Like, isn't it possible that they made up the story about Jesus rising from the dead? Or they embellished the stories? They took from like, there was a guy named Jesus, but then they took them and kind of added some things. They were getting popular. It was kind of cool to make these legends bigger than they were, and they did that. And that's how we got this myth about Jesus rising from the dead. In fact, we've seen that recently, right? We've seen in recent times, there's been some pretty popular authors who have written memoirs, and they've sold a whole lot of books. And it's come out later, like journalists have come back and they've dug into some of their facts, and they've realized that some of the facts are actually wrong, and that some of the popularity went to these people's heads, and so they made up some stories, they added things in their lives, they wrote things that weren't really true, and it's come out, it just wasn't true. I mean, didn't the same thing probably happen with the Bible? I mean, a guy rising from the dead, did that really happen? So on a historical level, it's a historical question. I know there's some who probably say, I don't know that I believe that's actually true. But it's also a personal question. Because you notice when I first asked it, I didn't say, did Jesus rise from the dead? I said, do you believe Jesus rose from the dead? Meaning not just do you think it happened as an event, like in your mind, not that's the conclusion you've come to, but is it something that you really believe, like with your heart and with your life? Because beliefs are like convictions. They're things that you live out. You don't just mentally assent to something. You actually live it out. It changes your life and your behavior. And so there's probably a lot of us tonight who would raise our hand and say, well, I think Jesus rose from the dead. I mean, I've been a Christian a long time, a religious person. I grew up in the church. I heard this story a million times. It's why we celebrate Easter. You know, I believe that. Yeah, I'm in. You know, I'm there. But do we really believe it? Like, does that belief actually impact our everyday life? Like, are we going to walk out of here and tomorrow at work or tomorrow in our conversations with friends or family and the details of our life, is this thing we believe that supposedly the most central thing to our faith, does it actually make a big difference in the way we live our life? Those are the questions I want to explore tonight. Is this something we really believed happened? And if so, does it make a difference in our lives? And I want to do that by looking at the earliest account of this story about the resurrection. It's found in Mark chapter 16. So if you want to turn there, in fact, I'd like for you to turn there. So grab one of the black pew Bibles in your pew in front of you and turn to page 713. 7:13. That's where Mark chapter 16 is found. And I'm going to read it in just a few minutes. But let me tell you a couple things about this. This is probably, historians and scholars think, this is the earliest account, recorded, written down account of the resurrection. Mark was, you know, there's four books in the Bible about Jesus, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And Mark was probably the first one written out of all of them. And it's true. He probably didn't write it till 30 or 40 years after the events happened. That's partly because it was a very oral culture back then. People didn't write things down. They just communicated orally. They shared stories orally. That's how most people communicated. That's also partly because most people weren't literate. Most people in that culture couldn't read and write. And so they didn't write things down. And it was really expensive to write things down. Papyrus was very expensive. And so only people that were wealthy or only officials in the government who could record, you know, significant things that happened at the, you know, level of the Roman Empire actually could write things down. And so a fair amount of time passed where all these stories about Jesus had been told over and over and over. And finally, Mark said, you know what? We've got to record this. Like, we've got to write this down so people remember it and we can send it out and tell people about it and they can actually read it. And so he, we think, was pretty good friends with Peter, who was one of the original disciples. And so he collected a lot of these stories, he talked to other people, and he wrote it down in this book called Mark. And then Matthew did the same, Luke did the same, and John did the same. And their books at points overlap and they tell some of the same stories. And at other points, they tell a little bit different stories. But Mark was probably the very first recorded account. And what I want to do tonight is read for you the section of verses that talks specifically about the resurrection. And I want to point out three things that are really surprising about this story. Three things that you've probably never seen before. You might have read this before, but I bet you've never seen these three things. If you've never read it before, hopefully there are three things that I think speak to this issue of, did this thing really happen? Or was Mark just making this up? Was Mark just embellishing? Was he just exaggerating? Was he just passing some things on to gain some popularity? And hopefully these things that are surprising will help us figure out, what should the resurrection mean if we do believe it? So I'm going to read through the whole passage first, and then we'll come back and look at it. Mark chapter 16, starting in verse 1. This is what he writes. When the Sabbath was over, which would have been Saturday night in their time frame, when the Sabbath was over, Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James, and Salome bought spices so that they might go to anoint Jesus' body. So Jesus had been crucified on Friday. This was probably Saturday night. And then it says, very early on the first day of the week, that's Sunday morning, just after sunrise, they were on their way to the tomb and they asked each other, who will roll the stone away from the entrance of the tomb? But when they looked up, they saw that the stone, which was very large, had been rolled away. And as they entered the tomb, they saw a young man dressed in a white robe sitting on the right side, and they were alarmed. Don't be alarmed, he said. You are looking for Jesus the Nazarene who was crucified. He has risen. He is not here. See the place where they laid him. But go, tell his disciples and Peter, he is going ahead of you into Galilee, and there you will see him just as he told you. Trembling and bewildered, the women went out and fled from the tomb. And they said nothing to anyone because they were afraid. And the passage stops there. In fact, the book of Mark stops right there. Now, there's an interesting twist here, and let me just explain this real quickly, because you'll see this note in your Bibles. Mark probably actually didn't end his book right there. He probably wrote a few more verses, a few more sentences, maybe a couple more paragraphs. Scholars have looked at this, and they believe it's just kind of a weird way to end what's supposed to be an uplifting book. You know, the women were scared, they left, they didn't tell anyone. That's it. Like, that's the end of the book. And so they think, and based on some other reasons, that there was probably, Mark had written some more and written an ending to the book, but that it got lost very early on, which was very common because it was the very end. And so these things were written on long scrolls, and what usually would get ripped off of the scroll, probably the first page or the last page. And so there's a lot of ancient scrolls where we're missing the first few verses or the last few verses of a scroll. And so probably it got ripped off, the ending got lost, and so it was just circulated and copied and recopied and told without this ending. Well, down the road, people recognize, you know what? We know there used to be another ending. In fact, there's stories that this got lost and was ripped off. And so let's try to recreate it. And some people tried to recreate what they thought was the ending of Mark. And so they took some verses and some ideas from Luke and Matthew and John, and they took some things that people had said were part of the ending of Mark, and they rewrote it, and they added that to some of the scrolls. So that some of the scrolls that historians have found from about the 5th century on contain this recreated ending. But all of the most ancient scrolls that we've found don't have the ending at all. So if you look in your Bible, you'll see that it's got some extra verses there that are in italics, and that are off to the side, verses 9 through 20, and you'll see a note that says these verses are not found in the oldest manuscripts. Because we think they're probably similar to what the ending looked like, but we know they weren't part of the original book itself. So for what we've got, it ends in verse 8. Now, jumping back to the story of the resurrection, for verses 1 through 8 and what Mark tells us happened on the first Easter Sunday, I want to point out three really surprising things that we might miss if you're not looking for it. Number one, the first surprising element of Mark's account is the strange silence of the Old Testament. The strange silence of the Old Testament. Now let me explain that, because in those verses we just read and looked at, Mark doesn't mention anything from the Old Testament once, which you might be going, and? Like, so? Like, what's important about that? What's important is because all throughout Mark's book, over and over and over, he mentions the Old Testament. In fact, in the 5 chapters previous to this, where he describes everything that took place in the last week of Jesus' life before he went to the cross, over and over and over, Mark alludes to, references, talks about, quotes the Old Testament. He tells us that when Jesus came into Jerusalem a week earlier, that all the people shouted Old Testament verses proclaiming Jesus as their king. Mark tells us that when Jesus teaches in the temple that week, he quotes from the Old Testament book of Isaiah. He tells us that when Jesus tells stories with people that week, he quotes from the book of Psalms. Mark goes on to tell us that Jesus debated with the religious leaders that week, and he would talk about Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and Moses and refer to the Old Testament law. Mark tells us that Jesus began teaching his disciples that week about God's coming judgment, and he started quoting the Old Testament prophets. And then when Jesus shares his Last Supper, Mark tells us. And then when Jesus is betrayed by Judas, Mark tells us. And then when Jesus is arrested by the soldiers, Mark tells us that all of this is happening so that the scriptures, the Old Testament scriptures, would be fulfilled. And then when Jesus is on trial, Mark tells us that he quotes the book of Daniel. And then when Jesus is hanging on the cross, Mark tells us that he calls out a verse from the book of Psalms. And it's almost like Mark is writing this story of Jesus' life, and it's reaching this crescendo, like it's reaching the most pivotal, climactic moment where Mark is telling us over and over and over, this is what the whole Old Testament was pointing to. This is what the whole Old Testament was foreshadowing. And you almost expect him to get to this story about the resurrection and him to sort of say resoundingly and defiantly that all of this happened. Jesus rose from the grave because it was told in the Old Testament, and this fulfills everything that had been told. But Mark doesn't do that. It's like in this one account, he doesn't mention the Old Testament at all. Neither does Matthew. Neither is John. Neither does Luke. Why? Why is it that they were so focused all throughout the story on how everything was happening according to the Old Testament, and then they get to this one episode and nothing about the Old Testament? Well, there's a historical answer. The historical answer is the reason that Mark doesn't mention the Old Testament at this point. It's because what happened was so surprising and so unexpected. And so Mark isn't trying to exaggerate the story. Mark's not trying to embellish the story. Mark's not trying to explain the story. Mark's not trying to interpret the story. He's not trying to prove anything. He's not trying to defend anything. He's not trying to speak to all the skeptics out there and say, well, let me tell you what happened and why it happened, and let me give you some evidence, and this is what the Old Testament prophecy said. See, that's what's going on. It's almost like at this point, Mark just decides, I'm just going to let the facts speak for themselves. I'm just going to tell what happened. And historians look at this one passage and they say that actually lends historical credibility to what Mark's saying. It actually tells us he wasn't trying to embellish anything. He wasn't trying to exaggerate anything. He wasn't trying to prove the skeptics wrong. He wasn't trying to make up a story. He was just letting the story speak for itself. Well, that's a historical answer. There's another answer that I think is just as significant and compelling. One scholar explained it this way. His name is N.T. Wright. He wrote this. He said, Mark's resurrection narrative conveys the naked feeling of a solo flute piping a new melody after the orchestra has fallen silent. It's like his story has reached this crescendo where the orchestra of the Old Testament has been saying over and over and over, this is happening according to God's will. And then in this surprising moment, this unexpected moment, this beautiful moment, it's like it just falls silent. And Mark just lets the story speak for itself. It's surprising. It's strange that it's silent, but maybe that's how God works. Well, that's the first thing. There's the strange silence of the Old Testament. The second thing I want to point out is the strange presence of women in the account. These eight verses are told entirely through the eyes of women. We see that three women decide to go to the tomb. Three women are anointing the body. They buy the spices and go to anoint the body, which is what typically the women did. Not always, but typically. We're told that on the way to the tomb, they were worried that they weren't strong enough to roll the stone away, which is interesting because in the other stories we read, 2 days before, it was one man who had gone to the tomb and helped bury Jesus and rolled the stone in front of the tomb. So we know the stone wasn't that big. One man was able to roll it in front. And yet these three women, we don't know if they were frail or they were weak or they were small or what, but they were worried that they weren't strong enough to roll the stone away. And then we're told at the end that they were so scared about what they experienced when they got there. They were alarmed, they were frightened, they were bewildered and trembling, and they fled away. It's like the whole story is told through the eyes of women. Now, that's remarkable for two reasons. First, it's remarkable because most ancient stories are that way. Let's be honest. Most ancient stories, whether in the Bible or anywhere else, are told through the eyes of men. And yet, it's more remarkable on another level because, ladies, I hate to say this, but in ancient Jewish culture, women were not considered credible witnesses. Women were not considered trustworthy. If there was a trial and they needed to bring witnesses to say what happened, women couldn't be admitted as witnesses. In fact, there was one Jewish historian, he's probably the most famous Jewish historian, his name is Josephus, and look at what he wrote. He said, "Let not the testimony of women be admitted on account of the levity and boldness of their sex." So guys, next time you're arguing with a woman and you just want to win the argument, you just quote Josephus. Hey, let the woman's testimony not be admitted to this argument. Yeah, don't do that. You might get slapped. The point is this. Women weren't considered very credible witnesses during that time. And if Mark was trying to prove something, if Mark was trying to make sure that people believed his story, if Mark was making up a story, if Mark was trying to prove the skeptics wrong, if he was trying to lend credibility to this story in any way, he would have never written women into the story. Or he would have replaced them, or he would have omitted them, or he would have thought of the most upstanding, well-known, reliable men that could be put in the story to say that these reliable men that we can all trust were the first ones to the tomb, and they were the ones that found it that way, and that's what they saw, and they're the ones that told us that everything happened. I mean, that's what Mark should have done. That's what he could have done. He could have just not mentioned the women at all. In fact, there's one story later that Paul tells where he tells the resurrection story and he doesn't mention women at all. He just mentions all the guys that saw Jesus. Not that Paul's a bad guy or anything, but it would have been easy to just leave the women out of the story. But that's not what Mark does. Why would he put them in there? Or why would he leave them in there if he was trying to win an argument? If he was trying to lend credibility to something that wasn't really true. The truth is, he probably left him in there because that's probably just what happened. And that's the way it happened. And Mark decided to just tell the story as it happened, even if it wasn't good PR, even if it wasn't going to sell it well in the ancient world. In fact, there were a lot of skeptics later on who said they didn't believe this very story. One guy named Celsus said he didn't even believe it because the women were the ones who first came to the empty tomb. You see, it didn't help Mark, it didn't help Matthew, Luke, or John to have that. And so it just raises a question to us, why are the women so present in this story? The third thing that I want to point out about this story that's strange is a strange absence of personal hope. A strange absence of personal hope. In other words, the story ends with the women afraid. They're bewildered. They're trembling. They run away. And even if there was another ending to Mark that got lost, which there might have been, it's still in the middle of the story. It's not like Jesus, you know, the angel says, "Jesus is risen and now you have hope in your life." He doesn't say, "Jesus is risen and so guess what? The good news is one day when you die, you're going to be risen too." He doesn't say, "Jesus is risen, so guess what? Whenever our friends or people close to us die at their memorial services and their funerals, we can all have hope." The angel never says, "Jesus is risen, and this is what's going to happen to you," or "Jesus is risen, and so when you're going through tough things in your life, and it's really hard, and you're suffering, you can remember that God takes really bad things, and He turns them into good things. Now, all of that is true. And Paul will later write all of that and say all of that. But Mark doesn't do that here. And neither does Matthew, and neither does Luke, and neither does John. In fact, the only thing they say is this isn't about the future. This is about here and now. Jesus is risen. So go tell people. Jesus is risen. So you've got work to do. Like, Jesus is risen. This is important, and this is going to change your life. Not in the future. This doesn't give you some future hope. I mean, that's great. But Jesus is risen. So, like, go tell people right here and now. The world needs to change in light of this news right here and now. I don't think that challenge the angel gave or that others gave when Jesus rose from the grave is any different for you or for me. I think the same mission is true for us. And so I just want to give a couple of takeaways that I think come out of these three things and out of this story tonight. The first is this. If you're in that group of people who still says, well, I'm just not sure I believe this actually happened, I want to challenge you. I think the historical evidence says it probably happened. And if you come to a place where you say, you know what, I've researched this, I've looked at it, I've really studied it, and I think there's really good historical reasons to think this event didn't happen, well then, good for you. That's good. Seriously, that's fine. But if you'd say, I've never really explored it, I've never really studied it, I don't really have any good reasons to believe this didn't happen, or I've just kind of avoided it, or I've just put that question on the shelf because I just don't want to deal with it right now, you owe it to yourself to ask this question. Because if he didn't rise from the grave, well then yeah, move on. Still figure out what you believe about God and Jesus' teachings and all those other things. But if he really did, well then that changes everything. That doesn't just change history, it should change our lives. So you owe it to yourself. If you're in that camp that says, I'm not sure I believe it, know why you don't believe it. And if you don't know that, you need to ask some questions. Second takeaway, for all of us who might say, yeah, I believe it. Question is, what does it actually change about your life? I don't think it just gives us personal hope, though it does. I don't think it's just a picture of what's going to happen to all of us one day, though it is. Paul would say, this is what's going to happen to us. Jesus is just the first one to rise, and one day we're all going to rise and have new life just like he did. But I think maybe just as importantly as that, it's like Mark is telling us, look, there's business to be done. Like, there's work to be done. This should change everything about our lives here and now today. Easter isn't just a good story. It's not just a good ending to the bad kind of crucifixion story. It's not just another holiday to celebrate. If it's true, it's the greatest day in history. If it's true, it means that Jesus is risen. That statement is the greatest news we could ever hear. And it's the greatest news that we could go out and tell our neighbors, our friends, everyone we know. Now, how do you do that? Well, we're about to kick off a whole new series for the next 6 weeks where we're going to look at a group of Christians very early on after Jesus rose from the grave, ask these kind of questions. How do we live this out? What does it mean to live this out in our lives and actually tell people about this news that's changed our lives and changed history? So I hope you'll come back for that as we try to figure that out and look at how early Christians did this. But maybe just put that aside for today. And let the message of the resurrection challenge you to think, am I taking the best news the world has ever heard? And am I sharing it with everyone I know? Because guess what? Somebody shared it with you one day. And hopefully it's changed your life. And so we need to share it with others. Whether you're in middle school, high school, college, married, single, with kids, young, old, wherever you are, whatever you do, this is the message of the resurrection. Let me pray. Father God, we read this story tonight, and it's challenging to all of us. For some of us who still have doubts and questions, it raises new questions, and I pray you would help us to search those out. For many of us who have maybe believed this for a long time, I pray that we'll come back to this day in a new and a fresh way. And I pray that you'll give us the boldness and the courage that those women had. They ran away scared that day, but then they eventually went and told a group of men who didn't believe them either. Those men eventually believed, and they told a group of other people, and they told others, and they told others. And eventually that movement has changed the world and has changed many of our lives. So I pray as we wrap up tonight, you would just help us to celebrate well. You give us joy. You give us peace. Where there's parts of our lives where we're mourning, you give us comfort. And when there's parts of our lives where you're moving, you would open our eyes to help us see that. Pray all this in your name. Amen.